Our featured BBB Wise Giving Alliance accredited charity seal holders for this episode are
Alpha One Foundation, American Friends Service Committee, Barth Syndrome Foundation. To find out more about these and other BBB Wise Giving Alliance accredited charity seal holders, go to give.org.
You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by BBBGive.org. Here we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
This is the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by BBBGive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator, and it's your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked about charities. I'm Art Taylor. If you've been listening to the podcast, you will be aware that we've been doing a number of episodes on AI, this incredible technology or technologies that is rapidly changing the way that we live, work, and play. And, you know, when it first came out, I was really taken by it and began to think about how it might enhance the work that we do at the Wise Giving Alliance, helping people make more informed giving decisions. And so I immediately sort of got together with my team and said to them, let's take a look at this and see how we can actually use it to help people. And we built a product, which we're going to talk about today. But I also want to talk about how we built it and the thought process that we went through. And with me to do that is my colleague, Ezra Vasquez D'Amico, and Jeremy Kirschbaum, who is our consultant that we reached out to actually do the tech part. But you'll find out from this conversation that it's truly a partnership between the technology that we needed to do this work well, but also the philosophy and values of our organization that we wanted to make sure lived through the particular technology. So Ezra and Jeremy, welcome to the Heart of Podcast, and let's get into a conversation about AskGive.org, as it's currently known. But first of all, let's get into a little bit of talking about you. I want to start with you, Jeremy. Jeremy, tell us a little bit about your background and a little bit about why you even turned toward in the direction of AI to do work. Why are you working in the AI space right now?
Thanks, Art. It's great to be here with you. My background actually is in innovation research and consulting. Back in 2018, 2019, I was working with companies, with innovation labs, think tanks, helping them think about innovation process and how to do new things. But it was all very qualitative and all very writing-based, and came across some earlier natural language models called BERT and GPT-2, and was just really struck by what they could do, and frankly, how similar what they were doing was to what I did. They were coming up with ideas. And so I very much had this feeling of being a farmer with a shovel and being shown a tractor. And so started getting deeper into the tech, working with clients to do machine learning projects. 2019 was when we did our first machine learning projects. Things like sorting text messages better, things like helping people generate code in isolated small ways. And we built from there. And as the models have gotten better and better, the kinds of things you can do with them have gotten so much more beautiful and interesting and creative. And as someone who's also a writer and a poet and an artist, that's been a great joy to me to see this kind of qualitative way that people get to interact with other kinds of knowledge and thinking come to computers too. and then getting to work with organizations to help them think about what their purpose is and how they can reach people in this kind of profoundly new way now that natural language and other forms of creative expression can happen in a computer without lots of engineering.
Fascinating. Well, I want to just hold up this idea too, that we met Jeremy through the Institute for the Future, where he is working on a project with my good friend, Bob Johansson, who is a senior fellow at the Institute. Bob's written probably 15 books that help us think about the future, or as the Institute people would say, arrive at the future early. And the project that he was working on with Bob was so interesting that I thought maybe we could do something similar at the Wise Giving Alliance. And what Jeremy is doing there is taking some of Bob's writings and making them more accessible to people using a GPT or large language model so that they could access and be even more future ready using that information. So when I heard about that, I was thinking, okay, maybe we could do something with Jeremy. I also want to just mention before I introduce Ezra that the Wise Giving Alliance's concept really predated this GPT world, because we had some conversations, I want to say back in 2017, 2016, in our previous, maybe even 2015, in our previous strategic plan work. And we were just iterating ideas and just bouncing ideas off of each other about how we could better help people. And we came up with this notion of Ask Bennett. Now, what is that? So Ask Bennett came out of this thought that there's this guy who works for us. His name is Bennett Weiner. You'll hear him on this podcast because he's going to give you a tip for giving at some point. We usually insert him in the middle of the show. But Bennett Weiner has been doing work on charity accountability with the Better Business Bureau system and with the Wise Giving Alliance. I want to say for 40 years. And I would say to you that there is no one in the world who knows more about charity accountability and trustworthiness and what it takes to achieve that than Bennett Weiner. And he's constantly giving people information and tips on how to give. And we thought, how cool would it be if we could take the entire brain of Bennett Weiner and put it in a chatbot? Actually, we didn't call it a chatbot. We were thinking about a hologram. Imagine, you know, you could experience this hologram where Bennett actually comes up and you're talking to Bennett. Bennett, what should I do? You know, we just came into some money and we want to give some away to our favorite charities, but we want to make sure that they're all accountable. Or Bennett, what should we do? There's this disaster. How should we best help? Or Bennett, you know, we really don't think that anybody's working on this particular disease. Can we give some money to support that? Or we want to volunteer. What should we think about? And any of these questions, Bennett, the hologram, would actually be able to answer using all of Bennett's information. Well, we thought it was a lovely idea, but at the time, there wasn't a tool or there wasn't the technology that we were accessible to that could actually do that. So we held on to the thought. And then when the GPTs came out, we were like, okay. Then I met Jeremy and I'm thinking, okay. And then I knew we had in our organization somebody like Ezra who would be so excited by the opportunity to take something like this on that I said, okay, maybe the stars have aligned here and now is our opportunity to produce this asset, this resource for people. And so I immediately went to Ezra and we got going. And I want you to, Ezra, talk about, well, first of all, let me just say this too. Ezra also helped us create the first ever giving platform built with blockchain technology. We call that Give Safely. Check it out if you haven't, because it's a really amazing technology that enables you to give peer-to-peer. It's awesome. That's for another show. But for this show, we got Ezra connected, and of course, he was so excited. So Ezra, talk about our process, really, for getting to this place where we're now very close to releasing the tool that I think is really going to help donors. So go ahead.
Yeah. So I've been with BBB Wise Giving Alliance about 8 or 9 years now. And pretty shortly after I started the organization through arts leadership, we started taking a future focus. So thinking about, okay, we may be very good at what we're doing right now, but we need to start forecasting and thinking about what's going to be happening in the future. Because if we're still doing what we're doing right now, 10 years from now, the context, the world will have changed and we might be behind. And it's better to be, you know, investing a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of resources and kind of trying to prepare for the future versus, you know, always being playing catch up. You know, we started with the blockchain and crypto program and saw some success in that. And then we started with the AI program more recently. And part of the idea behind it was, well, we have this wealth of information in our staff, like Bennett Weiner, as Art Taylor said, but also in our resources on our website. We have all of Art's podcasts. We have the Wise Giving Wednesday blog that Bennett has been writing for many, many, many years. We have our...
Well, we have charity reports.
Yeah, our charity reports, of course. And then we have our Wise Giving guides, the magazines that we send out a number of times every year. And those are actually really effective kind of as a technology in themselves in reaching people at their homes and especially older donors, like looking through those and learning from the articles and seeing whether a charity is evaluated and also kind of their accreditation status. But we were also finding that we might not be reaching the younger donors in such an effective manner as we were reaching, you know, the older donors. They don't necessarily look through our Wise Giving guides. And we've been thinking, well, how do we reach them? Younger donors behave and think differently than older donors. They use different kinds of technologies. They tend to care more about causes than institutions. So how can we bridge that divide? So we had the idea, well, maybe AI can help us. Maybe AI can help us connect with them and help them connect with the wealth of information that we have on our site. So oftentimes people arrive through our site via Googling an organization. Is Art Taylor's cat charity a good charity? And they'll see our give.org report pop up and they'll come visit our report. They'll get the information that they need and then they'll leave. Well, we have so much to offer them. We were thinking, well, how can we connect them with that information in a way that's targeted and kind of meets their expectations, is friendly, is fun, but also, you know, has valuable information behind it.
Well, and we also have things like the donor trust reports that go into this learning model, and also a whole host of information on how charities collaborate. So we have a lot of information. The charity reports themselves go into the thousands. So there's so much information that we thought, let's unleash it so people can actually access it in a way that is meaningful to them, right? And so Jeremy comes in and he says, well, if you guys are going to do that, there's some things you got to do first. So Jerry, tell us about that, because you didn't let us just jump to the technology. You made us think about some other things first. So go talk about that.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time thinking about what we wanted this to do and doing some learning together about what kind of design affordances there are with generative AI. It's, I think, something that informs a lot of what we do at Handshake is our background in innovation process and group process and working with organizations to get on the same page about doing something new, particularly with something like generative AI, which is kind of like a Rorschach test for what people care about. People want a system to do any number of different things, and it can do any number of different things, but it can't do all of them well all at the same time. There's also a lot of trust that goes into building one of these kind of things with an organization, because the expectations are sometimes unexpected and also, sometimes the answers we don't know. You or Ezra or someone would say, well, can we do this? And we'd have to say, well, I'm not sure. There's not documentation on that. We need to go test it and see if that's possible and come back and say, okay, yeah, it is possible, or no, not right now. And so going through that process of understanding, what does give.org do? What is the culture behind it? Why do people come to you? How do you talk? What do you want people to know? And then doing that's what start that precedes actually expressing this as a tool, actually expressing this knowledge, because knowledge is as much a process as it is a set of facts. And that's what really brings it to life and makes it more than just a super fancy, slow search engine. And we were really impressed by Give.org's ability to get together and design this together and get in the minds of the people that come to Give.org and think about what they might need out of it. And something that made working with Give.org on this really a pleasure was Ezra's leadership and the consistency on the client side. We rarely have this kind of situation where there's leadership on the client side. There's a combination of both trust and rigor and hard work on the client side so that we can make progress really quickly. Usually it's having to manage a lot of different requirements and expectations from a lot of different people. So, and I think that's a testament to the vision that Give.org and seems to have in terms of how they want to influence the next 5-10 years, the innovation that happens in this space.
Great. Well, Ezra, you know our organizational culture. Talk about how elements of our culture feed into this particular tool.
I think more than any organization I've worked with, people are here because they want to be here. They're very qualified, very competent, believe in the mission, and the mission is very clear. We're here to serve charities, help them demonstrate their trustworthiness, and serve donors, you know, help them connect with trustworthy charities. So it's easy to understand who we are and what we're doing, I guess, for the staff. And it's easy for us to communicate that in the work that we do day to day. You know, everyone from, you know, Shaquilla, who works at doing our admin work and also answers the phone. She communicates with charities every day. And then each one of our staff members, we work with the charities on their evaluative reports, looking at their finances, their governance, their fundraising practices, how they measure their own work. So we're talking with their CEOs, their lawyers, their accountants, right? So I think we have a very open culture of communication because we trust who we are and the work that we do. And we worked hard to translate that into the tool as well. I think it was essential throughout the process to decide who our audience was and how we would communicate with them, what our goal with them was. And Jeremy helped us with that a lot. And his team led us through a design process where we decided, okay, this is going to be a tool targeted to donors to connect them, again, with our information, with our charity reports. I think if we'd tried to do something for donors and charities at the same time, it might have been muddled and we wouldn't have done either of them well. So I guess getting back to the initial part of your question, our organizational culture is the people. And so we were able to communicate who we were into the tool through design decisions, but then also through the process of designing the tool. We set up an AI committee with, you know, yourself, Art, Bennett, with Kelly, who's our general counsel, Sean, our director of evaluation, other analysts. We had a call with Shaquilla to get her input. So we worked really hard to get that those voices expressed into the design process of the tool.
And that is important because one of the things that people get concerned about when they hear the words AI in a workplace context is, uh-oh, they're coming to find a way to replace my job. And that was, maybe people had that thought, I don't know, but that was never really a consideration that we had about using AI to get rid of people. Or to even, we didn't even start with the idea, let's make people more efficient in their work. We said, let's focus on how we can help people make better decisions about how to support their charities and better understand how these organizations operate. It had nothing to do with how do we make people's jobs easier. Now, I think that's a great notion, too. We should try to make people's jobs easier. But if you just come out of the box, I think, with how do we become more efficient? You're going to make a lot of people really uneasy, right? Because they're going to be thinking, yeah, maybe they're talking about making my job easier, but what they're really talking about is how they can work without me. And that was never a consideration. So people were more comfortable. And if people are more comfortable, they're going to engage more. And I think that's maybe why we were able to get folk to actually engage and be inspired by what we had the potential to create. At least I like to believe that.
And if I could add something, Art, I think we were also not starting from zero. I mean, we'd already been through the process of designing the blockchain crypto program in a way that was trusted by us, our staff, our board. So there was already kind of that culture of innovation that would kind of built into the organization through doing something. Yeah. It's not like we'd all been assigned a book to read on innovation and then we're all innovators, but we'd actually gone through a process before. So I think that really helped us a lot. And, you know, it helped our board probably also trust us and that they'd seen that we'd delivered on, you know, a project already successfully.
The other thing I'd mentioned that Give.org had done already that made this really possible was that your data and your knowledge base was already really organized and synthesized, and you'd built up this knowledge base in a way that was accessible and well thought out. And so then when it came to, okay, how do we make something that takes something that a donor wants from us and connect them to this knowledge in a dynamic way? It made that process much easier because then we're thinking about what are the kinds of things they're going to be asking, what are the kinds of things they're going to be thinking about, and how do we connect that to different kinds of data? And in a production application like this, a way that it's different from, you know, the simpler kind of GPTs or talk to your PDF type things that you find online, is that different kinds of things that the user does mean you access different kinds of data dynamically on the background, in the back end and selectively. And when we interact with an organization that doesn't have all that organized already, then most of the project is just getting all that together. And because that was already done by Give.org and so much thought and time had already gone into that, it meant that all the time could be spent on the design and the more interesting parts of it. So I think when organizations are thinking about organizing their data or making whatever they call it, making their data lake, making their database, whether it's like data analytics or AI, it pays so many dividends. And Give.org's clearly had done some work on that already that helped us move quickly.
Well, and that data was key to the whole project because we wanted to narrow the amount of information that went into the creation of this tool because we knew that there are more general purpose ways to access information on charities just by going to any GPT because they're going to be scouring the internet for information. There's going to be a lot of it out there. But for us, the importance was the type of information. Ezra, talk about the importance of trust in building this.
Yeah, so we trust all of the information on our site. And we're lucky because it's all created by us, by our staff. The other thing is that it's targeted towards donors, arts podcasts. They're made for donors and charities as well. It's the heart of giving. Bennett's Wise Giving Wednesday blogs, they're advice blogs for donors that charities can also find use in, but again, you know, it's targeted towards donors. And underlying all of it is our mission, which is clear to us, and then also our standards for charity accountability, which gives us, I think, a solid base which to produce any sort of content because we know, well, when it comes to governance, these are our recommendations. You know, when it comes to finances, these are our recommendations. We have security in what we say. And then we also are secure in knowing, hey, we don't judge one cause versus another cause. We don't have any political affiliation. We don't judge a charity based on their political affiliation or how they choose to do their work. So I think that also benefited us. And we work to translate that ethos into the tool as well.
And now it's time for our giving tips segment with Bennett Weiner, one of the world's most renowned experts on charity accountability and the COO of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance.
Today I'd like to talk about trust in the charitable sector. You know, verifying trust is really at the heart of what BBB Wise Giving Alliance does in terms of its charity evaluations and the 20 standards that we use in reporting on charities. But we've done survey research of the general public for over 6 years now, and we found out that although 70% believe it is essential to trust a charity before giving, they really believe it's important, only about 20% of them report a high level of trust for charities. So there is a sort of a trust gap. Trust is important, but there needs to be more done in terms of trusting a charity and verifying that, and that's where we come in. We're a standards-based evaluator, and how do we define trust? Through our standards in terms of the governance issues, the finance issues, the results reporting issues, and the accuracy of appeals, donor privacy issues, among other things. And we've always used a holistic approach to charity accountability. Now, this isn't one issue or two issues. It's a whole bunch of things that make up that component collectively that helps us verify whether a charity is trustworthy. And that really gets to the, again, the heart of what our charity evaluations are about in that approach to evaluation. If you want to learn more about the standards that we use, please go to give.org, where there's a description of all 20 standards and how we apply each one of them in the reports that we conduct.
Well, you know, one of the other areas that I think people get really concerned about when they think of AI is the data itself. Can that information be trusted? You know, and you point out just so articulately here that we stand behind the information that goes into this. Jeremy, talk about the hallucination effect and maybe what we've done here to minimize that.
Yeah, the hallucination means when the language model invents something, when it makes something up, when it says something that's not true. And there's two parts to this problem, and an easy one and a hard one. The easy part of the problem is when the LLM is given some information and then goes off script. You tell it something, it goes off script. This takes work to make sure that it doesn't do this, but with a high degree of reliability, we're able to get it if it's given some amount of information, for instance, a piece of an article from give.org, that then when it's responding, it doesn't go off script. The hard part of this problem has nothing to do with the technology. The hard part of this problem is what do you tell it to do with that information? And what does that mean for the people that are using the product and for the organization? If you are bringing a fictional book to life, you only want the language model to hallucinate. You don't want it to answer questions about the book. You want it to talk like a character. You want it to make up scenes. You want it to dance around and entertain. If it's not hallucinating, that's going to be an awful, boring experience. If you are building your system over a set of technical documentation, you want zero hallucination. You want this to be barely more than a search engine. You want it to spit out facts, and that's it, with no embellishment. Most of these sit somewhere in the middle. And that middle part is really interesting and fascinating and hard. And we've been talking a lot about the things that we think that the system does well. I should say that on this podcast, we haven't yet put this in front of users. I'm not worried that when we put this in front of users, that it's going to break or that it's going to hallucinate in the sense of giving it some information that's not on the give.org site. I think the lessons are going to be the guesses about how we think people want to interpret this and how they want the information handled. Is that going to be satisfying to them?
Say more about that.
So we were working with an author. We were actually working with Bob Johansson. I'm glad you brought up Institute for the Future. I've worked with them for many years. They're a beloved client. And Bob is a wonderful mentor and friend. We're writing a book together coming out in March 2025 about the intersection of senior leadership and generative AI. And some of our work together has been really interesting and groundbreaking. And we brought to life early, almost probably like a year and a half, 2 years ago, one of his books that he wrote with Joseph Press and Christine Bolin about remote work called Office Shock. Mm-hmm. And when we first did it, we thought that people would read the book and then use this as a reference. And so as a result, if you asked anything that wasn't explicitly in the book, it would say, I don't know. But then users were coming and asking questions that they thought were very reasonable. They were saying, you know, what will be the role of laws and jurisprudence in remote work? How will that be affected? And they're getting, I don't know, asking these reasonable questions they thought were reasonable, getting, I don't know. And so ultimately, we changed it so that instead of just relaying things that were in the book, it would take part of the book and provide its best interpretation from a future back foresight informed perspective about what their question was. And given the use case for these authors in that situation and these users, that was a better answer. Even though we are now asking the model to hallucinate by some definitions. We're asking it to come up with analysis that is not explicitly mentioned in the book. And with the give.org, the askgive.org system, some of the questions about this were, if people ask really directly to recommend a charity, how do we handle that? If people want to know about charities that are accredited versus not accredited, how do we handle that? If people are wondering about something and how it applies to them, how specifically do we have the system relate to that specific problem they're having versus giving general statements? And we've come up with something that we think is going to be helpful to people and interesting without going into territory that would be misleading. But it's a hard problem, and it really comes down to what a community thinks is the right way to handle these things. That's the hard part of hallucination, not the technical part, frankly.
So as we talk about how we decided to handle that problem, the one specific problem of recommending a specific charity.
Yeah. So imagine you go to the tool and say, is charity A or charity B better? Luckily, we have content that describes how to think through evaluating a charity, how to think through giving to a charity, and steps that you can take. So the tool responds with, while I can't recommend charity A over charity B, I can give you some tools to help you think through that process and consider their mission. When you're on their website, do these sorts of things. If you have an appeal, maybe look for these sorts of things. And of course, check their report on give.org for the most up-to-date information on their accreditation status. So I think that was an elegant solution. Another thing we did, which was, I think, a really useful way of approaching it, was to give answers, again, based on our content, but to provide references underneath. So the answers that are provided, they're substantive. They feel like they're a full response that have meat to them. They provoke some thoughts. But then under each of those, there's references where that content came from. So for example, if somebody asks about charity working with pets after disasters, underneath the response you'll get is an interview with a charity professional talking about that is on our website, or a blog post that addresses that issue. So I feel like that's really valuable, because for me personally, especially when I first started using the GPTs of the world, I'd get answers, but then I realized very quickly that I could not trust the answers that I was getting. It was making stuff up hallucinating and going pretty far afield from what I was looking for. So for me personally, I like being able to trust what I see, but verify. And then after a few iterations of checking the links down below, I've realized that, yeah, the content that's being provided is useful. It's presented in a thoughtful, friendly way. And I can always kind of look for more underneath in the references.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to just point out to people why the BBB Wise Giving Alliance will never sort of say or recommend one charity over another. And it's because we don't think that it is our role to do that. It's for everyone to decide whether a charity is better than another. What we're going to do is give you insight into the charity's accountability and let you know from our perspective the extent to which charities are trustworthy. Now, there may be numbers of charities that are trustworthy that meet all of our standards. They may do the same thing. They may be involved in animal rescue, let's say. So we're not going to tell you one charity is better than another. That's not our role as we see it, although I'm sure lots of people will want that. Now, the machine, Jeremy, we could have set it up where it did that, right? We could very easily have asked the machine to tell us, give them an answer, and it would have done that, right?
Yeah, that was a design decision. And even if you do decide that you want it to give an answer, you then have to decide, how does it give that answer? And all of these really come down less to the technology and more to what's the purpose of what you're trying to do. And I wish I had mentioned this earlier in the conversation, that we at Handshake don't think that we have all the answers in terms of how to implement or how to design generative AI systems. This stuff is really new. And I think that all of this takes a lot of patience and learning. And I've been really impressed both at the bravery of give.org to taking the stance that the nonprofit sector shouldn't be last to get involved, that they should be part of defining how this evolves, because a lot of what happens now will define how the future goes. But also the bravery with humility that they've demonstrated, that they don't want to go into this assuming that we're creating the end-all be-all solution, but that there's a commitment to learning with donors, learning with charities about how to do this, and that the only way to do that is to put something out there and get started and do it in a way that's safe and do it in a way that's high quality with the knowledge that that we'll keep learning. So there's no experts yet in something that hasn't been around for more than 5 years or so. So we're all learning together, no matter how much rigor we put into it at this point.
Well, you know, and I'm so glad you said that, because it is new. And some people will say, well, I'm not an expert in this stuff, so I need to leave it to the experts. You're an expert. You just need to get in there and play with it. And you'll be surprised just how much you can learn and how fast you can learn it. And it's not really about the technology. See, that's what I keep saying. It's about the deployment of the technology. It's about how you want to use it, that I think we really need to have people who have lived experiences weighing in on. And that's one of the reasons why I was so quick to jump on it, because I did not want it to develop around me and not have any say in what we were doing or what should happen with it. And so I've been doing a number of podcasts on this. I've done some with Toshi, who from the Institute. I shared a talk that I gave at the Society for Human Resources Professionals to about 250 professionals out at the Microsoft campus on how this project evolved and what we learned from it. And I'll continue to do shows periodically on the development of AI. And I think it's important to have fun with it, especially now when you can kind of get away with mistakes and snafus, right? And, you know, I'll do things like put out avatars on LinkedIn where it looks like I'm talking to myself, but I'm actually having a conversation with a digital avatar. I think that's fun. Now, some people will say, well, we got an election coming up and these deep fakes are going to be causing us problems. But I mean, this is a fun way to do it. I'm not running for any election. You know, I'm just having some fun trying to promote the podcast. So we got to deal with those problems. I don't want to make light of that. Definitely don't want to make light of it. But I think you have to get involved. You have to do things with it. And I'm really hoping that people will come and use this tool and give us their feedback and let us know how we can improve it. Are there things we should do differently? And on that vein, Jeremy, let me just ask you, as our partner in helping us develop this, what have you and Handshake learned from this?
That's a really good question. We've learned a lot about kind of some of the ideal processes for putting these together and what some of our ideal situations are for the kinds of questions we ask at the beginning, middle, and end of a project. And we've also learned a lot about, through talking through some of the design decisions, how to work with an organization and a community in order to get something out in public. We've done production systems before, and we've worked with a number of organizations on these kinds of projects, but the depth that we were able to go into in terms of thinking about the style and the approach and coming up with those principles with Give were very helpful and interesting for us. And so that's stuff that we'll definitely be carrying forward.
Well, Ezra, I want to give you the last word. I want you to say what's on your mind, but I also want to ask you more about why you think someone should use this tool.
So I'll start with the second. I think it's an excellent tool to explore possibilities. So we've tested it, you know, with very specific questions, very broad questions. You can go to it and say, hey, I have a cat named Sylvester and I care about cats and there's strays in my neighborhood. What can I do to help? And the tool will point you to resources, will give you advice, and there will be references underneath. It will help you find charities that work on the causes that you care about. So play with it, test it out, we made the very deliberate decision not to make it a search tool, but to make it a conversational tool. So it's going to remember the question that you asked it two questions ago, and that'll influence its answers to you. And we're actually really excited about that part too, because when you have a website, you can collect data on who visits and that sort of thing. But with the AI tool, and this is in the term, we're collecting the questions so that we'll get a sense of, well, what do people who are visiting our website, what do donors care about? And, you know, if we find out that everybody cares about charities serving giraffes in Africa, well, we'll put our minds together and create more content around that. We'll do an interview with a charity that works on that sort of thing. Or if it's a whole different subject matter, we're going to use that. And then I think a lesson that we've learned too is to start small and iterate. Jeremy and the Handshake team have been really good at helping us plan and execute on our mission and our goal with the tool, to use it as a tool, but also kind of keep it bounded so that it remains useful. And I think we're going to deploy it thoughtfully. It's going to appear on our website in the next couple of weeks. We're not going to do a huge press release first because we want people to test it out. We want our charity partners to test it and give us feedback. And then once we've got and we've gathered some of that feedback, then we can do the big push and share the AI for good story that we're putting together here.
Oh, great. Well, I'll just tell you that the feedback that I've been getting from the people that I've given the link to test it has been very positive and very hopeful. So when we're releasing this in a few weeks, I think you're all going to be really impressed by what you experience. And if not, we'd like to know that and tell us what we need to do to make it better. But I think it's going to be more of the wow factor than the not so wow. And we'd like to know that too, frankly. You know, if we've done a good job, let us know. You know, give us something to pat ourselves on the back about. Well, look, this has been great. Obviously, maybe we'll get you guys back here in a few months just to see how things are going with the tool and get some more sense of how the public is responding to it. But this is great. And I think it will also encourage other organizations to get into this work. And I should also give Jeremy a shout out. You know, if you need a, I don't know if you're going to be doing this for a lot of other people, Jeremy, but there are going to be people probably calling you saying, you know, what can Handshake do something for us? We'd like to hire them to do some work. So we'll make sure people know about Handshake and Jeremy Kirschbaum.
And I'm also, I'm happy to talk through our experience with them if anybody's looking to get more info on Handshake too.
Well, so this is the Heart of Giving podcast. It's a weekly show. A new episode comes out every Tuesday. So if you're listening to it for the first time, please subscribe. If you've listened to it before and haven't subscribed, please subscribe. And the reason subscription is so important is that the more people who subscribe to the show, the broader the reach. So these algorithms, you know how they work. If they see people liking something or subscribing to something, then they'll make sure more people get to see it. I know the content is outstanding on this show. The guests are really amazing people. And if you take the time to listen, you're always going to get something really valuable that will feed your soul, that will feed your brain as well, and give you some insights that you can use to do your work better. So with that, I'm going to say thank you for listening, and we will see you back here again next week.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's terms of service.